Hello and welcome. It's another episode of Empire of the Cop Insider with the lovely Neil Jones of Covering Liverpool, again with us here today to discuss another body blow to Liverpool's title charge. It was a 1-0 home defeat to Crystal Palace, with Eberechi Eze unmarked in the box, scoring a well-worked opener in the opening 15 minutes for the visitors. Neil, Liverpool weren't totally bad, though, it's worth pointing out. I think there was an improvement in the second half. They created chances. There was an XG score of 2.87, which I'm informed by Opta is the most XG, the highest XG registered by a side in a Premier League match since Brighton played Norwich 2 years ago without scoring. Just a case of us being wasteful? Is that how we sum it up?
Yeah, I think probably a couple of familiar themes, I would say. Slow start, punished, and wastefulness costing Liverpool in the second half in particular. It is strange, isn't it? Because I don't think Liverpool played well. You know, I couldn't come away from that game. Even if Liverpool had the 1-2-1, I would have come away and said, that was a tough one. They sort of got away with one a little bit, or they had to dig deep. But they created a lot of chances, and you think, I mean, there's two, I saw an Instagram post this morning, it was two side-by-sides of Curtis clean through and Jota, obviously, on the six-yard box, and you think how neither of those have ended up in the net is beyond me. And then there was the Salah one at the end where you thought that has to be a goal. You know, there was Nunes had one early in the second half. So four real great chances, you would say, in the match that you know, on another day they could take all four, on another day they could take two or three. But at the same time, I still think Liverpool were the architects of their own downfall. Like I say, you mentioned there in the first 15 minutes, I did some research yesterday and they've conceded the first goal, or they've gone 1-0 down 15 times in the first 25 minutes of a game this season. And, you know, while we can always praise and we can always sort of rely a little bit on Liverpool's resilience and their ability to get back into the game and figure games out and go in and regroup at half-time and make subs and things like this, the more times you go to the well, the more you're increasing the chances that one day the well will run dry. And it looked like it might have run dry in the second half against Manchester United. It looked like it had a run dry against Atalanta on Thursday in the Europa League, and it again on Sunday. So it depends on your viewpoint, doesn't it? Whether the only saving grace is at what happened to Arsenal on Sunday, or whether you actually feel even worse about Liverpool's failure today because of what happened to Arsenal. Because when you look now, Liverpool had the chance to actually take complete control of the Premier League, didn't they, on Sunday, in a home game against a team in the bottom half, and they failed to win it. They wake up on Monday morning, and I think there'll be a lot of regrets, but also I think there'll be a lot of resignation, I think, from not just the fans, but I think a few of the players as well might feel like that was the chance. That was the one that they've missed, and there won't be another one.
I suppose that's the painful kind of thing about this. You know, you look at sort of Jurgen Klopp after Atalanta saying there will be a reaction, you know, take this home with you, feel it, but there will be a reaction come face Palace. You know, the disappointment is real, even if our expectations have been sort of changed by our current position in the league table. Obviously, much of us at the start of the season would have gone top four after what we experienced last year would be an acceptable enough sort of finish. But is it just literally that, just our luck catching up with us, the emotional demand of having to come back? And so you listed that stat there. Is it just it's all too much, and it's the emotion of this title race, there's two other competitors that deserve also to come away with a league title. Is that how we boil it down?
Yeah, there's a lot of things at play. I think you're right. The emotional sort of drain of having to be on the knife edge so often. You know, Liverpool, even the great moments of Liverpool this season, all of the great moments really of Liverpool this season, they've all been sort of knife edge moments, haven't they? You think of the Carabao Cup final victory, you know, you think of great sort of late winner at Nottingham Forest and roaring sort of comebacks at Newcastle and things like that. They've all been when Liverpool have been right up against it, and it's brilliant. You know, it says a lot about the team's resilience and character and quality that they've been able to do it so regularly. But when you get to this stage of the season, what you want is a quiet life, you know, as quiet a life as possible, isn't it? You want routine, and you want Manchester City beating Luton 5-1 on Saturday. You want that kind of thing where, you know, you have to exert yourself, but you don't have to sort of absolutely drain yourself physically, technically, emotionally. But Liverpool, we know they're not particularly like that, are they? They're not that type of team. Well, you know, when they were for that period, that's when they obviously they steamrolled the league, when they became that sort of winning machine in sort of 2019. But what they've been this season is really, really rugged and resilient and consistently able to dig out these results. But you also, I think, another thing that you didn't mention, and it's easy to forget, this is a very new team, and there's a lot of new players there that are experiencing this for the first time, and not just players who were signed last summer, but younger players who've come into the side, and they were around, you know, that great Liverpool side, but they weren't centre or front and centre of it. There was obviously signings that came in previously. So you're looking at people like Darwin Nunez. This is the first time he's been there with Liverpool in a title race. Alexis McAllister, Dominic Szoboszlai, Wataru Endo, Harvey Elliott to a large degree. Curtis Jones obviously was around the last one. But yeah, okay, this is the first time that he's had to start games in a running potentially. And, you know, when it's all been on a knife edge. Connor Bradley, obviously similar. You know, we went to that Quiveen Kelleher in goal in games as well. So there's a lot of newness around it. And, you know, it's not just those players that have underperformed in the last week or so. Some of the experienced players and, you know, the likes of obviously Salah, Van Dijk, I thought, had a poor game on Thursday. He wasn't amazing on Sunday. Konate, I think, had a couple of poor games. But all that adds up, I think, to just Liverpool potentially just coming up short. And there was always the danger that they might. You know, I thought there was a chance they could win the league. I thought the momentum, and I thought especially if they'd have won at Old Trafford, I thought the momentum would have maybe carried them to that title. But there was always a chance that Liverpool would come up short. I think a lot of people have suspected, you know, outside of Liverpool, that they're not quite as, their pedigree is not quite as strong, if you like, or their credentials are not quite as strong as Manchester City or even Arsenal. But there's still six games to go. And I looked at that, and, you know, you look at the league table. I was writing my stuff yesterday, obviously, while the Arsenal game was on, sort of quite doom and gloom. And then Arsenal get beaten. You look at the league table and you think, well, I'll tell you what, if Arsenal can get beat at home by Manchester City, then by Aston Villa, then what can Manchester City can lose at Tottenham? So, okay, that's that. Arsenal goes to Tottenham as well. You know, there is potential for twists and turns. The one worry I have now, and I think the one worry that's fair to have around Liverpool, is even if the other two slip up, are Liverpool going to be faultless? And I think they're going to have to be if they're going to have a chance to win the league. And I'm just not sure whether they're in the position at this moment in time to win the last six.
I feel like we've said this a couple of times now, you know, Liverpool need to be perfect. Liverpool really do need to be perfect going into this now. Obviously, you made the point there about sort of the inexperience in certain members of the squad. Obviously, I think Robertson did allude to that a little bit sort of after the game, when he was sort of discussing how we sort of came up with this result. I think the important thing to remember as well, of course, and I'm very curious certainly how we approach looking forward to the end of the season with the new manager coming in. Obviously, Edwards and Hughes will have some say over sort of how we're sort of structuring the squad going forward. None of us want to be reactionary and sort of say, I think it's very important we avoid being reactionary and saying, he needs to go, he needs to go, he needs to go, and all this kind of nonsense. But I think, is there some room, would you say, for some ruflessness in how we approach the squad structure moving forward? And I personally wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I'm partly expecting to see at least one transfer where I think, wasn't quite expecting that to happen in terms of exits.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's room. I mean, there's obviously a couple of issues that, maybe not ruthlessness, but big decisions, certainly, you know, with contracts, of course. And Salah's probably the biggest one of the three, isn't he? That, you know, that needs to be sorted, really. I've been on record as saying I would give him another year. I would let him see out his contract and take another year off him, but I don't think Liverpool will. There's obviously, I think, Alexander-Arnold's contract needs to be sorted. I expect that will be sorted personally. And I think Van Dijk will get another contract as well. But there's room there, obviously, at this stage where if that hasn't been sorted, then, yeah, there's decisions to be made. But I agree with you in terms of the rest. If you look at the sort of the ones who aren't, you know, coming to the end of their contract, or who are in the sort of the mid peak age, if you like, you know, in the early to mid 20s, there are some decisions there. I mean, I was thinking about, obviously, Luis Diaz has been linked with a move away from Liverpool quite recently, and there was talk about his contract. Well, you could make a case either way. You could make a case that a great offer would be too good to turn down, and actually you could maybe get a player comparable or as good as Luis Diaz or better than Luis Diaz. So you can make that case. Or you could also make the case that actually, do you know what? Luis Diaz has been really, really good for Liverpool. Carried them through a really tough period early in the season, and he deserves to be treated as a star. That depends on your preference. I think there's others. You know, I know a lot of people. I think a lot of people might have the same opinion about Darwin Nunez. I personally, I'm a big fan of Darwin Nunez, but I think a lot of people might get to the point of saying, actually, do you know what? Two seasons in, you know, do we maybe need to be brutal, or does the team need to change in the way it's set up to really, really sort of get him out or get the best out of him? You know, I suppose you could look at, I think centre back is an issue, not an issue, but an area that definitely still needs another player. Regardless of who the next manager is, and if the next manager plays with three centre-backs, then of course that adds to it. But I think you're still in the same position, I feel, with Ibu Konate that you were in when he signed, in the sense of, yeah, he's a really good player and he's really got potential to be a top player, but he misses too many games. And actually, you know, you spend a lot of the season having to compensate for his absence. I think... I think all of the signings you signed last summer will obviously, you know, some of them are very much for the long term, but others deserve a bit more time. But I think there'd be some people who'd look at Ryan Gravenberch and say, okay, well, we need a lot more from him. What would happen if a bid came in for him? But you'd have to consider it. But I get that. I do get that. There's no obvious ones. There's no one where you go, that's absolutely flashing red on the dashboard that needs fixing. But there's a lot of ones where you go, well, let's see, you know, if 50 million was on the table, what would you do? And I think there's a lot of players at Liverpool at this moment where if 50 million was on the table, there'd be a split in terms of what you did with them, whether you'd sell or keep.
Absolutely. And you've got the new manager coming in who's obviously going to implement their style to a certain degree. And I'm sure they'll have certain players perhaps in mind. I'm certainly curious about what's going to happen with Ruben Amorim. I mean, he's on quotas having told reporters, I don't feel like I've finished a cycle. I feel like I want to keep going, so this isn't over yet. We want to win. We want to win and keep moving forward. I mean, it's not as definitive as Alonso's statement at Leverkusen, but there is at least a suggestion there that he would contemplate staying another season at Sporting. What's your sort of position on that? Is that a worry? Yeah.
No, I think he's been very sensible, really. I mean, they're in the position, obviously, that they had the big win on Friday, didn't they? So they're on the brink, really, of obviously winning the league. They've got a cup final coming up. So I think he's just in a position of let's not have these distractions. I think he said this is the last time I'll talk, didn't he? You know, between now and the end of the season about my future. And I think it's fair. You know, we've talked about it. I mean, we do these shows and we say, oh, yeah, well, you know, Liverpool want this player or this manager. You know, we want this, but you forget about the club or the fans that obviously that manager or that player represents, and they have to be fair to them. You know, they have to put them front and centre and put them first in this situation. And I think it's only right that while Sporting are in a position where they're, you know, potentially going to have the perfect end to the season, he's not dampening the flames or upsetting the apple cart by saying, well, yeah, I dream of going to Liverpool, and God, it'd be wonderful if Liverpool came and knocked. You know, you don't want to take anything away from what they've had, which is a magnificent season. So I think it's fair from him. Obviously, look, there has to be a chance that he does decide that he's happy with Sporting, but it would be unlikely to me.
I certainly don't want to knock his sort of decision-making process, because like Alonso, he'd be absolutely entitled to do whatever works for him, his family, his future, all that lovely stuff. I suppose that you might say that, right, if you win another league title, you win the Taça de Portugal, which I think he hasn't yet won with Sporting. Well, all you've got left at that point, really, is a European accomplishment, which, again, not to be disparaging to Amorim or Sporting Lisbon, seems a tough accomplishment for a Portuguese side, I would have to say, especially if you think, well, barring a ludicrous end to the season for Liverpool, Champions League football is pretty likely for whoever takes over the job next year.
Yeah, and he's a young manager, isn't he? I think he's clearly an ambitious manager. You know, you've seen some of the interviews that he's given. I think he's spoken in the past about sort of, you know, he aims high. He knows he's in demand, doesn't he? He knows that it's not a deep pool of managers at this moment, but there's a lot of clubs that are probably fishing in it. And I think he's not soft. You know, I think he knows he's going to have an option, at least one good option, maybe more, come this summer. So I think he probably would leave Sporting this summer. But like I say, he's still got a job to do, and so have Liverpool. You know, we're talking about the end of the season and sort of needing this kind of, you know, lift and emotional finish to the season. They're in exactly the same position. You know, they're 4 points clear of Ben. They were 7 points clear when I looked. I don't know if Benfica won yesterday. I think they were playing. But they were 4 points, they're at least 4 points clear after that win. So they're in a really good position to win the league. Got a cup final. I think he's done the right thing by his club, by just cutting them stories down, if you like, and making sure that every press conference he does isn't dominated by, you know, well, reports in England say, or reports here say, or, you know, Liverpool have you agreed the deal or this and that. I'm sure there will be some more that we can talk about Ruben Amorim, but it might be just at the end of the season.
No, absolutely. I mean, certainly frustrating from his perspective, when given what he could achieve with Sporting this season. And unfortunately, I believe Benfica did win against Moriense. I've probably horrifically pronounced that, 3-0. So that's just the 4 point gap that obviously Sporting can still open again to 7.
Yeah.
So looking very good for their end of season run in. We talk about the likely candidates. I'm going to spare a moment for perhaps an unlikely candidate, because the Daily Mail have now reported that former Bayern and Wolfsburg boss Niko Kovac is emerging as a surprise contender for the Liverpool job. I mean, with the greatest of respect to Kovac, that's not a candidate I would look at and think Liverpool should be all over. Maybe some will disagree with me, but I was certainly surprised to see that reported this morning. What's your thought process on this one?
Well, I saw the headline, and it made a lot more sense to his agents sounding out Premier League clubs or something along those lines. So yeah, I think that's an agent led story. That feels like, to me anyway. It feels like Niko Kovac's agent sort of saying, well, you know, look, there's a guy here, you know, who's managed Bayern Munich and has got a good pedigree as a professional, and, you know, this and that. But yeah, I don't think Liverpool will be in the running for Niko Kovac. It'll be someone who's a lot more who's got a lot more recent pedigree.
Yes, I'd imagine the same. To be honest, I mean hypothetically, because I do still believe, and certainly I think you've very much reassured me regarding Ruben Amorim, but hypothetically, were he to decide to follow in Xabi Alonso's footsteps and rule out being the next Liverpool manager and keep on with the Sporting project, where does that leave Liverpool? Look at the candidates like Odds Checker and that sort of thing. I mean, we spoke about Simone Inzaghi a couple of times now, but the rest of the list isn't massively encouraging, I would say. I don't know if that's perhaps too negative.
No, I don't think that's something too negative. I think it leaves Liverpool with already in an imperfect situation with two of their least imperfect options gone, doesn't it? You know, Alonso and Amorim. So yeah, whoever they appoint, I've said this a few times, that it's going to be a manager that you're going to go, well, I like that about him, and I think that's possible and that's potential, but there's always that, and that's a worry and that's an issue, and you know, what if that happens? So I think you're gonna have to be in that position regardless, even if it is Amorim. But what it does, yeah, of course, it takes away what the next in line, really, doesn't it? And puts Liverpool in a position where there's probably even more of the negative aspects to any manager that they get subsequently. So, I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, Steven Gerrard, I imagine, would be on that betting list. Obviously, Julian Nagelsmann. I don't know how Ange Postecoglou potentially would be in there. I thought Graham Potter, you know, even as I'm listing them, I'm mentally ticking them or crossing them off in my head almost. So, yeah, it leaves Liverpool with a real tough decision, but I think they've already got a real tough decision. You know, they've already got a sort of a situation where whoever comes in is going to have not an impossible job, but a very, very tough job. And yeah, as I say, probably the other fly in the ointment a little bit is that there's a few other clubs in Europe, Bayern Munich and obviously Barcelona, potentially Manchester United, potentially Chelsea. There's a few other clubs as well that look like they're going to be looking for a new manager. If not now, then certainly in a month or two.
But the important thing is Liverpool are still in the running for Ruben Amorim, still in the running technically for the title race. The perfection is now very much.
Listen, I just look, I think everyone looked at Arsenal's away fixtures, didn't they, and said, oh, that might be where they tripped up. And they tripped up at home to Aston Villa. So that does give you some reassurance. Maybe even Liverpool's defeat gives you some reassurance that, look, there's often a curveball at this time of the season. I think the big worry is it just didn't happen to City, did it? And they're the ones that, you know, if you were looking and saying, well, who's going to win the last six games regardless? They're the ones who've got course and distance, City, aren't they? And, you know, I suspect they'll end up being the ones lifting the title come the end. But you just never know, do you? And they've still got to go to Spurs. They've still got to go to Brighton, I think, at some point as well. So, you know, while there's hope, you know, we can all dream. But I think Liverpool missed a big, big opportunity on Sunday.
Mad, isn't it, how our sort of season started with the Spurs mistake and now we're sort of potentially reliant on Spurs to do us two massive favours against our closest title rivals. But you never know in a season like this. And obviously, if Liverpool do go over to Bergamo on Thursday and we do manage to get another massive European comeback away in Italy.
This conversation. I hadn't even thought about that. But you know what? I did write that in my stuff today, actually, on Substack. I said, that's where the comeback has to start. Even if Liverpool don't win the tie, you know, they don't win 4-0, that's where the comeback has to start for me. You have to see Liverpool looking a little bit more like themselves. They have to just be a bit more solid, a little bit more ruthless. You know, just all those things that they haven't been in the last few games. And if they get a glorious failure over in Bergamo, well, you know what, it might just be the sort of the little unlock. You know, it's not the perfect situation, obviously. You don't want to be going out to Europe, but if they go over there and win 2-0 and don't quite do it, and everyone says, you know what, fair play, Liverpool had the right good go. Well, it could just unlock something for the remainder of the league games. But yeah, they've got to improve. They were dreadful on Thursday night. I was at Anfield, obviously, Thursday, and couldn't believe how poor they were. I expected them to have a response against Palace on Sunday. I expected them, you know, I was sort of thinking, if that was City or Arsenal who'd had that defeat against Atalanta, I'd be thinking, oh, Palace are going to get whooped on Sunday. You know, they're going to get beaten 5-0. And I wouldn't have been amazed if Liverpool had come out and done that to Palace. And I was pretty shocked when I saw the first 10, 15 minutes at Anfield. I thought, wow, what's happened here? So they've got a lot to prove to themselves, I think, and obviously to the manager, but also to the fans. And I would like to think that they're capable of going to Atalanta and at least giving a good account of themselves and having a go and maybe, you know, scoring a few goals. I don't think they'll turn the tie around, but if anyone can, Liverpool can.
Absolutely. I mean, these things tend to come in threes, don't we? We've had United, we've had Atalanta, we've had Palace. It's time for a new dawn. We'd like to see some fire in this Liverpool side's belly heading off to Bergamo this Thursday. And hopefully next time I'm talking to you, we'll be talking about a Liverpool resurgence with five league games to go. In this title race that's proving to be rather anxiety-inducing for the Liverpool supporter side of the equation. Neil, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on again here with us today at Empire of the Kop Insider. Please, everyone, go and check out Neil's work on X at Neil Jones Goal and on his Substack. We're covering Liverpool at neilj.substack.com. We'll be whacking out all this kind of good stuff on our own Substack at empireofthecop.substack.com, and check out the socials and YouTube as well. For now, this has been Neil Jones. I've been your host, Farrell Keeling. This has been Empire of the Kop Insider. Ciao.